Hey, everybody, it's Sunny Bunch. I am pleased to be introducing this week's iTunes episode. We're talking about Winning Time. Winning Time. You remember Winning Time? The famous Winning Time Lakers of the 1980s? That's what we're talking about this week. Fun episode. We all kind of love the show, actually. I'm still watching it. We're now, you know, I think 4 episodes into it. This is just the first 2 episodes, but you listen to this. Go sign up at the Patreon. You could have been in tune with the rest of the series. We may be revisiting this in a bonus episode. I don't know. It's hard to tell. That's too far to in the advance to see. We'll be talking about The Lost City, which is the biggest movie at the box office this weekend. If you want to check that out when it goes live on Friday, a bonus episode on Romancing the Stone, the 1984 Robert Zemeckis Michael Douglas movie. Check it out. Go sign up at subbeacon.com for the Patreon. It's as little as $1 a month. Good times.
There's 2 things in this world that make me believe in God. It's sex and basketball. You know?
I'm sleeping.
Her loss. I'm about to buy a team. I want to build something special. A real dynasty. But I need a partner.
First pick, 1979 NBA draft. The Los Angeles Lakers select Irvin Magic Johnson.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Subbeacon. I'm Victor Mattis, along with Jonathan V. Last and Sunny Bunch. Just a reminder, the Subbeacon's now available through Patreon. Go to subbeacon.com, you'll easily find us. Please subscribe, tell your friends. And don't forget about the Subbeacon merchandise store at tpublic.com. Gentlemen, how are we? JVL, what is going on?
Too much stuff. Too much stuff. Big life stuff. Nothing interesting from me.
Okay.
Santino, what's going on?
I don't think that so much big life stuff that I can't talk about it. But maybe we'll circle back to it in a couple weeks.
Yeah, we'll circle back to it in a few weeks.
Well, I'll have some questions. I have some questions for you. We'll come back to it. Okay, Sonny, how are you?
I had a bad dad moment.
Ooh.
This week. I had a bad dad. So,
who among us?
One of our, let me just explain our seating arrangements at the dinner table, at the dinner / breakfast, lunch table, whatever, the dining room table. On one side, you have me and my 3-year-old son, who's still in, like a booster chair. He's like strapped in. So he's a prisoner at the table.
Yes.
But he's not in like a high chair, right? He still has pretty full mobility. And then across from me is my wife, and then diagonally from me is my 6-year-old daughter. So that's the basic layout. I just want you to see this as I discuss what's happening. My 3-year-old has taken to essentially eating with his hands and then grabbing me on the arm while he's eating. So, mac and cheese or
just grabbing you
spaghetti.
On the arm to, like, to get your attention
just
to paw at you.
Just grabbing me and, daddy, pay attention to me. And I don't know if you guys know this about me. I don't love being touched.
It makes it very hard. I have questions about that.
But. I'm not somebody who loves being pawed at. Just in general, but
you're not a hugger. You're not a hugger.
I don't like being grabbed by dirty, disgusting hands. And I love my kids very, very much. But the other day I was wearing like a light colored American Giant hoodie. It's like my favorite thing to wear. And just I love this piece of clothing a great deal. Not as much as my beloved children, but very, if we're ranking
close. 1A, 1B.
And he had been eating handfuls because he knows how to use a fork and a spoon, but he just refuses sometimes. He's just eating handfuls of, like, triple cheese mac and cheese.
With his bare hands.
With his bare hand. Literal handfuls. And reaches over and grabs my light heather gray hoodie right on the arm.
Oh.
And I was just like, I just yelled, "Stop touching me!" at my 3-year-old, and it was like the worst. It's like the worst thing I've ever done, I think, to my kids, because I want to know about the reaction around the table. He didn't even faze it. He didn't give a shit about it. He didn't care. My daughter didn't really notice. Beth was like, "Don't yell at the kids." I was like, "Well, I try not to. I put up with a lot of grabs." So anyway, like, long story short, I take the hoodie off. I immediately throw it in the wash, and
didn't come out, did it?
It came out fine. Came out fine. And so the next day we're eating, spaghetti or whatever. Same thing, just handfuls of spaghetti. And I thought to myself, I should take my hoodie off before I eat dinner with the family. And I didn't. And same thing, just reaches over and grabs me again. And I was just like, you gotta be, because I've just done all the laundry. And I'm just like, God damn it. So I just put that in all by itself and wash it. And again, it comes out. And as I'm looking at the hoodie as it's dry, I look down kind of in the bottom, and I notice that all of this was for naught. All of this was for naught anyway, because 2 days prior, I had been cooking bacon. And it splattered all over the bottom of this hoodie. Just like little flecks of grease everywhere. So the long story short here is, not only am I a bad dad, I'm also a bad clothing owner. It's just filth, as for somebody who doesn't like being touched and doesn't like being touched by dirty hands, I'm still a filthy individual. And on top of all that, I feel bad now for having yelled. Luckily, he didn't care.
Yeah, Sonny, no, that's the thing. You feel bad, and then oftentimes it just rolls off them.
I want to help you, Sonny. I want to help you because I see two real silver linings here. The first is that you now have a dinner hoodie.
It's true.
Right? It's true. Since it's ruined anyway.
Like, instead of an apron, this is your
thing. It's like a smock. Yeah, it's like a smock. And now you can wear it and not care at all. But the other thing, because, we always have to count our blessings, Sonny. Mm-hmm. You weren't at the beach. Because to make your nightmare complete, you would have had to have been sitting on a blanket surrounded by sand.
Yes, that would have been much worse when he reaches over and throws a handful of sand down the into the actual hood.
That is your nightmare on Elm Street.
If you ever meet me and we're at a restaurant or something, don't just reach over and grab me to get my attention, please.
Is this a long-standing thing, or is this something that has just developed over the years?
It's relative. What, me not liking being touched?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's a. I have never been a. I'm not a hugger.
Yeah. Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. Except in Vegas, that was a.
Well, that was. I mean, that's different.
It's very.
That's after a few drinks, loosens up.
That's very, very interesting.
Yeah, no,
you're not a hugger. You're not a toucher, JBL. You don't totally. You're not a hugger.
It's just that the circle of people with whom I am comfortable with that.
Yes,
it's just very small. But within the circle of people who I consider family, not just my actual family, but the people I consider family.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very affectionate, very tactile.
JBL, what do you have in between your fingers?
Oh, you know what? I'm sorry. G-Money is in process on this amazing Lego set, and it's got these big rubbery tires, and so it's just like very satisfying to squeeze them.
I couldn't tell if you're wearing them like a ring or if they were.
No, I'm just fidgeting with them.
It's your version of a fidget spinner.
These are like the really high quality, soft rubber. Mm-hmm.
I love hugging. Any chance
you'll
I get.
You'll hug anyone.
Anyone. Anyone wants to come in for the hug, I'm there for you.
How about when the girls from the high school field hockey team come around for fundraising? Do you like to give them hugs?
Good to see you.
You just want to tell them that you're on their side and you're rooting for them?
No, there is that awkwardness, when you're not sure and you just sort of you bow. You can bow. Bowing is okay. That's okay. I'm
not. Bow.
Bow. Like, hello. Yes. Hi.
Wizened Asian man. Right.
Tori Hanzo?
That's right. That's right. You know who else? Our friend Matt. Our friend Matt Continetti. Not a hugger. Like, very much.
Yeah,
like Sunny.
That's why one reason we get along so well.
A little handshake. That's good.
You know.
We have a mutual friend. I won't say her name on the air, but she. I don't know if you know this about her. Somebody who the three of us are all quite close to can only hug on one side. Like, she has a thing about, like, so, you know, if you go to, like, you know, give us, she always, like, rotates to one side because the other side, like, just freaks her out for whatever reason. It's a real proclivity. And I've always.
So she's an ambi. She's not an ambi turner.
She's not an ambi turner. No.
She can only turn.
I'm now
left
intrigued on who we're
right
talking about.
Yeah, I have no idea who you're talking about. Yeah.
I'll tell you after the show.
Oh, okay. All right. Very exciting. Very
Victor Ann, what you up to, buddy?
No, this is like a quick. This segment is going to be a real short one because I don't.
We got a lot to talk about.
We do. We do, and I have a lot of questions for you guys. So this
do we? We have a lot to talk about with winning time.
Yeah, I mean, look, I've. Okay, we'll get to it.
I'm sorry. Before we get, I will only refer to this as Showtime.
No, Showtime. That is not the name of the show. That is the name of a cable network.
I will not refer to it as anything else.
Why couldn't they call it that?
Cable network.
That's what I want.
That is
very
weird. Because it's on HBO. They can't call an HBO show Showtime. You didn't figure this out? You didn't put two and two together?
No, I didn't think. Okay. I didn't even know anybody watches Showtime anymore.
We can discuss. I subscribe to Showtime. It's
really
a fantastic channel.
It used to be good after 11 p.m.
I watch once every 6 months.
You know, it used to be good after 11
p.m. No, that's you're thinking of Cinemax.
No, Showtime, too. Believe me. Showtime was
Showtime
like
Red Shoe Diaries?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, they were. Yes, they were. Dave Duchovny. Okay. I just wanted to give you.
I'm sorry. Did you call him Dave Duchovny?
Dave.
Yeah,
Dave's
friend. His buddy Dave.
My buddy Dave. Dave Duchovny.
It's like
Dave
me and Bill Fichtner.
Oh, Bobby De Niro. Okay.
I referred to John Bernthal as Johnny Bernthal today.
Sonny, you'll find this of interest that where the Pokeball used to be on that strip, you know, it's gone, right? It died in the pandemic.
Right.
A new place is opened next door to it because the actual space where Pokeball is now part of a building lobby. It's weird. It's just completely gone.
But they just extended. Weird.
Yeah, very weird. Very weird because there's nothing there now. It's just
death
open space.
Death of commercial retail.
Yeah, I mean that is a sign that.
But you remember
in
how it was like across the way? I think from. Potbelly or whatever it was, or Chipotle near that.
Yeah, it was next to. It was right. It was next to the Chipotle.
That's right. Okay. Yeah. So directly right next to Chipotle is Soul Spice. Soul Spice. S-E-O-U-L. Soul Spice. Do you like? Are you guys into Korean? Do you like Korean food? Do you get Korean much there in Texas?
My dad used to make a really good. Like Korean beef recipe, but
really?
I do not go to Korean restaurants now.
Oh, I love it. How about you, JVL? Do you like that stuff? There was a
the
place.
Only Korean I've ever had is this Korean chicken from a chain called Banchan.
Oh yeah, sure.
Which is amazing.
Yes, it's very good. A lot of salt, but delicious. So I've been going there, and they like almost all these places now. It's assembly lines. You know, you pick your base. You know, pick your protein, you do your thing, but you can get your bibimbap and you with your japchae.
Bibimbap.
Yes, exactly. And
I can't pronounce that word.
And by the end of it, it's like $16. But do you know what I like? I go for the bulgogi. That's what I like is the bulgogi.
Yeah.
Oh, the bulgogi?
No, the bulgogi. Come on. You must like it. I call it bulgogi.
Bulgogi.
I can't get enough of it. Like,
you can't get enough bulgogi.
Don't you get bored?
You go with a bunch of guy friends, they stand around and watch you until they finish.
No,
so
are
you're
you
done
kidding?
With the bulgogi?
I don't know what you're talking about, but I'm just saying you get tired of the day to day and you want something different, and you go for the bulgogi.
Does it come in a cup and then you drink it afterwards?
It was
how does
so
it work?
Spicy. I'll just put it to you this way: it was so spicy, my mouth was on fire. I normally like bulgogi, but I did not see that coming. Speaking of which, over the weekend, BTS. You're ruining my transition, Sonny.
We can't. We've only done 13 minutes.
I know.
We've got
nothing.
We
got nothing else.
I'm
gonna come back to the transition.
So I have a question. Vic.
Yes.
Whenever you go to a place that is you're given an empty bowl.
Yes.
And you fill it up as you walk down.
Yes.
What's the least amount of money you get out of there for? Because I like at the poke place, it was like, well, you get a little extra this, a little extra that. All of a sudden, it's like a $20 bowl of fish and rice.
Yeah, and poke bowl now in this environment, in this economy, would be like $30. You know what I mean?
At the Soul Spice, what's it called?
Soul Spice.
At Soul Spice, again, you're just walking down, you know,
It starts off innocently, you know, with a little bit of black rice or japchae.
The bowls are only $11.
Right? No, it's amazing. If all you eat is that, and then you start loading up. Initially, like, well, I don't, you know, like with the different toppings and condiments, and you're like, well, you know, they're the ones that are free. Initially, you're like, well, I don't really want the corn. I'll just take this. And then when you realize how much it's all adding up, whatever you get for free.
Everything.
You get it all in there.
You gotta get it all in there. That's how you maximize your power. It's interesting to contrast to the food trough, because again, with the hot plates of, you know, bubbling, boiling crap that just sit there and everybody touches them and sneezes on them. Like you're very consciously like filling up your own thing. You're like, well, maybe this a little bit.
But when the person in front of you has the bowl,
you're just like, oh, a little bit of this, a little bit. You're not thinking about it as much. And soon you get to the checkout, it's like, oh, it's $18.
That's exactly right. When it's the other way around, then you have to aim for things that are, you know, fried shrimp, for example. They're very light. The last thing I'm going to do is load up on rice in my
tray.
Absolutely. Like,
you know, whenever I want shrimp, I think, let me get it from a food trough. Yes. That's going to be good
eating. And it's totally fine.
Fried shrimp, you're going to be okay there. Yes, you don't want to get the cocktail shrimp.
I'll tell you this, Sonny. I thought the shrimp at the Bacchanal.
And
Caesar's Palace was questionable.
I didn't even get it.
It was questionable.
That's how you get stomach illness.
Yeah, that's how you get like in that movie Go. Remember JVL?
Yep.
Oh, it's a great scene. Yep. Go check it out if you haven't seen that movie. Anyway.
Okay, anyway, sorry.
Speaking of Korea, and over the weekend, BTS Permission to Dance on Stage Seoul live viewing came in third place with $6.8 million behind Uncharted.
Just missed it by 100,000. Could have had 6.9 million.
Really? I was looking at Box Office Mojo just today. Behind Uncharted.
No, I'm saying if it had been
6.9 would have been perfect. Yes.
It would have been very nice.
That's my number. Nice total. That's my number. Yeah. That's true. 6.9. Much like my sleep number, as you know. That's what I keep it at.
Of course you do.
And my thermostat. Everything. In my
you don't
car.
Actually have a sleep number bed, do
no,
you?
No, I don't. I was going to say,
JVL's going to come to your house and slash your air mattress.
I actually don't understand I guess it has to do with the firmness. Is that what that
it's
is?
It's science. Well, it's the most scientific.
JVL will
best.
Know.
What's science the best? Sleep. It's like an air mattress that's constantly filling to keep because, you know, many air mattresses leak slowly over time. And so if you would like it inflated to X number versus Y number, you can dial it in.
That's science.
It sounds like the waterbed of the 2020s. Okay.
I had a waterbed in high school. Those things are amazing.
Hey now.
Oh, I had a waterbed too.
What?
I had a waterbed. Oh,
you
yeah.
People. You
in like
fantastic.
The 90s? My folks were very into like the whole idea of water. Like, oh, it's so much more comfortable. And so I was like, yeah, I definitely want a water. And I was like, this kind of sucks.
Do you know what the best part of the waterbed is? It's the temperature control.
Well, that was nice. You can keep...
You had a waterbed. I cannot believe both of you had waterbeds.
Well, what I would do is in the winter, you turn it up nice and warm.
Yeah.
So the waterbed, you can be the perfect temperature to have just a sheet over you, no matter what the actual temperature is outside. And so in the summer, when it's a million degrees out, you don't even need air conditioning on. You turn that waterbed all the way down, and that water is just like sucking heat out of your body. I mean, nice and cool.
Yeah, that's what I would always keep it very cold, because I like having the comforter on me. I don't want a sheet. I need the comforter. I need the weight.
I prefer to have the just the...
No, I need the heavy. I need heavy.
I've never gotten one of those weighted blankets.
Oh, we've got a lot of those in my house.
You mean like a down?
Been very curious.
You like a down?
No, weighted.
No, like weighted blanket. Yeah. Like
you would like it.
Imagine going to, you know, when you go to the dentist and you get like the lead
for the X-rays,
they put like that, but a blanket.
Yeah, it's a big sensory thing.
I've thought about it because when they put that on you in the dentist chair, it's like, that's
very
kind of comfortable.
It's
kind of tired.
It's like to protect me from radiation. And perched atop, so Uncharted with $9.3 million and perched atop the box office once again, The Batman.
The Batman.
The Batman.
$5 million box office slots.
The Batman did a very good job of holding on to its audience. It dropped, I think, a hair under 50%, either a hair under or a hair over 50%,
which
is a very, very good hold for a movie like this. And what is interesting is that everything is holding very well, which suggests to me that audiences are starting to come back a little bit. Like everything.
And watch whatever's in theaters.
Everything in the top 10 had a drop of less than 23%.
It's because there are no other movies outside.
Well, but that's what I'm saying. I think that like people are actually getting to the point where they're like, I will go see Dog starring Channing Tatum.
Yeah.
And a dog. Or I will go see Uncharted. Because there's just nothing else.
How long do we have to wait for the Sandy Bullock movie with Channing Tatum? Because if that comes out soon, that is going to in this environment.
Yeah, it should. In this
where
environment,
people are just dying to go out to see it.
That's going
to you're going to end up having to sit in the front row looking.
It's going
to
do
70 seats left.
That's going to do 70 million opening weekend. Yeah. I think easy. No, that comes out not this weekend, but next weekend, I believe.
That's going to kill.
I think it's going to do very well.
I'm seeing more and more of the Nick Cage movie as well. That's not for a while though.
The unbearable massive weight of talent, the unbearable weight of massive talent, or whatever. Yes. That comes out in I don't know. I have to check.
Yeah.
I have to check.
Yeah.
But no, they. I think that the Sandra Bullock, Channing Tatum movie is going to do very, very well. It's going to be a big date night type movie. People love Sandra Bullock. People love Channing Tatum.
Right. It'll be and Brad Pitt.
Well, I still think that's a mistake. I still think it's a mistake to have that in the trailers.
I totally agree with you. I feel like, that's the big reveal is now. You know, it's like the whole movie. I've seen
because
the whole
clearly,
movie.
Clearly he is supposed to show up at some point, like near the end, as like the actual savior hero, and then he's gonna die. He's gonna die, and Channing Tatum is gonna have to like, you know, save the day.
Do you think that they decided to include it in the trailer because they thought, we're not sure how many people are going to see this movie, you know, and if we throw him in, then that's the closer right there. Then people
I'm
definitely seeing it.
Well, I got to go see Brad Pitt.
Yeah.
I mean, that's obviously the thinking. That's obvious. But I would assume it's
in his contract for the movie one way or another, right? I mean, I would assume that that's contractually stipulated, not something that they decided on the fly.
Well, I would assume. Well, so it depends. It depends, right? So like sometimes a big name actor will agree to play a small part in a movie, so long as you do not use their name in advertising. They can't be on the poster. They can't be in the trailer. It's like he's just there because the idea is like. If their name is being used to sell the movie, then that creates added pressure on them to perform and open, et cetera, et cetera. But I assume there must have been some sort of. I mean, I can't imagine they would tell Brad Pitt we won't put you in the advertising campaign, and then they would just do it. I'm sure there's.
Is he mentioned in the billing? Like, if you see the poster, does it say Sandra Bullock, Channing Tatum?
I don't think so. Not on the first one. He was not in the first trailer at all.
Ah,
I mean, the
really?
First series of trailers, it was just Channing Tatum and Sandra Bullock.
That is interesting.
But then he shows up, and so I assume you're right, Vic, that this is we're gonna really sell people on coming.
Yeah, yeah. They were.
But
I
feel like it's a mistake. I feel like you should keep that in reserve to have it.
That's
pop
right. Because if people
weekend.
Start watching that word of mouth will spread. Then everyone's gonna get drawn in about like, oh my gosh, you should see that. The other thing that I think is interesting is that I notice as not a movie expert, but whenever you see the top billing. And if you want to stick somebody in at the end, but make that person feel special, you have to say and.
Or with.
With.
Yeah, yeah. That's always
and.
The person who lost the negotiation.
And then and. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's always amazing because you see that in whenever you have like big name talent on TV shows and then they throw them in at the end.
The rarest of all. Is the introducing.
And introducing.
And introducing.
And introducing.
Right? Which I think I've only seen a handful of times. I've seen it with Lindsay Lohan in the Parent Trap. I saw it with Charlize Theron in 2 Days in the Valley. Mm-hmm. And it's, I mean, oh, you gotta
be sure that this is gonna be, this person's gonna be the next big thing. This, well, introducing, you know, in Temple of Doom, Short Round.
Yeah. There's a new movie That's with true. That kid.
What?
Well, I mean, he's like 40 now.
Yeah.
He's like 40, 45, 50
You're kidding.
Now. But he's, it's a.
He was in Squid Game, actually, wasn't he?
Oh,
no.
Come on. That's terrible.
First off, he's Chinese, not Korean. Yeah. But the, he called Everything Everywhere All at Once, which I'm seeing it tomorrow. I've got tickets for a preview tomorrow. I'm very excited to go see it.
That's exciting. Good for him.
But it's a multiverse action comedy starring Michelle Yeoh.
I was going to say Michelle Yeoh's in that, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Great.
I'll let you guys know how it is. It is 140 minutes long. So I know it's not. Why? That's one quadrant.
Why?
It's going to be not great on.
You know what? There might as well not be any movies this weekend anyway because of March Madness. It's going to be, everyone's going to be watching that usually.
Is that West, this weekend? Is that
begins tomorrow? So, JV, I was just about to ask you, do you follow any more brackets? Yeah. Nothing.
What seed is Virginia?
I don't think Virginia Tech is in it.
Virginia not in the tournament this
Virginia
year.
Virginia Tech.
I thought they were the new ACC power. What happened? Didn't they win a national championship like 3 years ago?
They did.
They won the national title a couple years
all
back.
The way.
But remember the year before that, they got bounced out in the first round as a number one seed.
That's right. It was the first.
To lose
was
to
it the
16.
First number one seed to lose?
First
and then
ever.
They came back to win it all the next year. And then I think the year after that, they got bounced out in the first round again.
It is.
It's
still better than Georgetown's situation, which is.
Did they get in?
Under, you guys going to fire Ewing? Or
under,
what?
Well, no, because this is how it works, as you know.
They're afraid he'll eat them.
Godzilla Patrick Ewing.
He's a hungry.
I'm not trolling.
He's a hungry man.
Are the Hoyas in or not?
No, they went 0-21 in the Big East. They won zero games.
What?
In the history of Georgetown, and not since I think DePaul from a few years ago, they went 21 straight losses for the first time ever. So worst season, worst
I'm
Big
so
East,
sorry.
And everyone is all upset about this. I've talked to our friend about this. You know our friend JVL.
Which one? Tom?
Our other
Junior.
Friend. I spoke to Junior, talking about rumors about what's going to happen. How's it going to go down?
I don't know who Junior is. What does that mean?
It's one of Vic's famous friends. Okay. Who's very plugged into college sports.
JVL will know because...
Is it Mel Kiper?
Well, no, but if you listen to Kornheiser's show, they used to refer to him as Junior. Anyway, and there
John Thompson Jr.?
No, but... they thought that, because it's so embarrassing, even though
Cal Ripken Jr.
They upped his contract last season after they won the Big East. And, you know, now they got to stick with it, even though this is the worst season in the history of the school, that he'll probably ceremoniously step to retire before the Big East. No, that didn't happen. So the athletic department then sends that. So everybody's up in arms. Everybody, the papers, the kids, the school papers, there's nobody on their side anymore on this. And alumni, the whole thing. And attendance has plummeted. And so the athletic department said, we understand people are concerned. And we are going to make the necessary changes to turn this team around. And that's why we are, that's why they're firing the assistant coaches. Because that's, you know, the problem is the assistant coaches.
So just to be clear.
It's not Pat's fault.
Just to be clear, they hired Patrick Ewing, and his first season wasn't great.
Yeah, he's been there for 5 years.
Oh, he's been there for 5 years now? I thought this was the third season.
No, believe it
or
not.
But he did win. He won the Big East last year,
right? He did. It was a...
Like the whole, regular season or just the tournament?
The tournament. They were like sub 500. So anyway, they were...
I think if you win...
Yeah, I know.
If you win
the
tournament,
you
get one bad season.
And but this
is beyond... If it happens again, he's got to go.
This is beyond bad. It's 0-21.
This is. Look, I said this to you. With
you did.
JT3,
you No. You did. You
right?
did. You did.
It
and this is before.
Always dangerous to hire somebody who you can't fire.
What I think? Yes, I remember that.
Boy,
I remember.
I bet
that
you guys
vividly.
You guys would kill for Craig Escherich now.
No, Craig Escherich was fired for less.
Right. Of course. But that's because him you could fire.
He was not part of.
He wasn't part of
the family.
The family.
The family.
And so,
and this
but now looking at this dumpster fire, I'm sure you guys would kill to have Craig Usherick back.
Not only that, but it also seems clear to me that even if, like, oh, you know, I remember you're saying careful about who you I don't think they ever had a choice, as our friend would say, with the old man in charge, with, you know, with John Thompson.
Oh, right.
You know, there was no, that was not an option of saying, oh, maybe we can look at some of these other coaches. You know, no, not an option. And there's a piece that came out.
Isn't he at like Harvard or something? They couldn't bring him down.
Yes, that would have been great.
Chance to coach in the Big East again.
There were a lot of names they were talking about, but and one of these other people had written about how behind the scenes is Ronnie Thompson, the other son. So it doesn't add.
And this is a serious question. I'm not trying to poke in your wound here.
It's okay. I'm very upset.
Is Georgetown a job that any up-and-coming coach would want?
It would really depend, because do you go in and say, oh, by the way, you know, you have to clear everything with Ronnie Thompson now.
Because it's...
And you have to attend the seance with John Thompson Jr., and he actually has input during the seance.
Why don't you just get rid of all the Thompsons?
Oh, yeah. No, that sounds just like clear a out, thing that they
clear
can
out,
do.
Clear out all the Thompsons.
You need an exorcism.
They can't. This is like the scene in Nixon, you know, where the hippie protesters like, you can't stop the war. No one can stop the war. It's like he has no control over this. Jack DeJoy, the president, has no control over this. He can't just say, oh, let's hide.
He can't. The Thompson family owns that program. Mm-hmm. And when the old man died, they had a chance. Well, Ewing is like an adopted son, right?
He is.
And they should have made a break with the entire family, even if it meant hiring a lesser coach, because then, you know, again, you're just hostage to it.
Yeah, and this is, you know, the idea that Pat was just going to use this on his way to actually wanting to become an NBA coach. That's not working out. But speaking of basketball, this week we are discussing Winning Time on HBO
Showtime.
Max.
It's called Showtime.
Showtime. About the full name, I believe, is Winning Time, The Rise of the Lakers Dynasty. One of you should give a big boy review. My question, before we even get started on this segment at the 30-minute mark perfectly, do you both follow NBA? Sonny, I know JVL, but Sonny, are you an NBA guy?
I used to. I grew up a Lakers fan because my dad grew up out in L.A. He grew up in 29 Palms. And so,
oh, yes,
like,
course.
That was, you know. So I lived in England during the, like, second half of the Winning Time franchise. Mm-hmm. The Winning Time Lakers, as we called them.
In your family.
In Ipswich.
Yeah.
They called it the Winning Time.
Everything's always a little bit different in Europe.
Yes.
So it's like the Royale with cheese and the Winning Time Lakers.
The Winning Time Lakers. We were big Winning Time Lakers fans, but I would just read like the box scores. I'd be like, oh, Magic Johnson did 27 points, 14 boards.
So explain to
me. But it wasn't until the Shaq and Kobe Lakers that I was like actually living in the States and like watching them dominate.
I have so many questions for you folks. Okay. So
I don't believe they did dominate.
Well, we'll get there.
They only won,
okay.
They only won.
How about explaining to our listeners what is this show about?
Do
a big boy review.
Okay.
So,
Winning Time.
Winning Time
is the HBO series about the Los Angeles Lakers as they are purchased by Dr. Jerry Buss.
Wow. You're ready to go, JVL.
I'm doing my Sunday impression.
No, that's good.
You should keep going.
No, I'm
It is an Adam McKay production, and he brings all of the ticks from the Big Short to this.
Fourth wall breaking.
There are switches in modes of taping where sometimes you're in film, sometimes you're in Hi-8, sometimes you're in VHS.
Yes, like VHS.
It was reportedly that Will Ferrell was going to be the lead in this, but then Adam McKay decided to cast Will Ferrell's best friend, John C. Reilly, in the lead role. And
not tell Will Ferrell.
Now Will Ferrell's no longer part of that little fraternity.
Is that for real?
Yeah.
Oh,
oh yeah. That's it. So we'll talk about all right. So Winning Time is the story of the Winning Time 1980s Lakers, Pat Riley's Lakers, Magic Johnson and Kareem. And then, you know, as
Worthy, who is the guy who was the absolutely underappreciated
as you call it, as you're called right now on the Squadcast.
That's
worthy,
right, right,
the
right.
Underappreciated.
We're you know. 2 years away from that on the show.
Yeah, we still got a ways to go. I mean, Pat Riley isn't even the coach yet. It's still Jerry West mm-hmm. who has at the end of the second episode has just resigned and said, I'm out. Mm-hmm. So as JVL says, the show is an Adam Kay film. It is the creators were Max Borenstein and Jim Hecht. And Adam McKay and Borenstein are the show runners. So at the end of every show, I don't know if you guys have stuck around for the post game
forum. The forum,
the yeah, where Rick Fox, Laker legend, Rick Fox, hosts like a post-show wrap up with McKay, and they.
Oh no,
and
I didn't know that.
The guy who plays Magic Johnson, and they talk Quincy about, you know, they do, they've whatever, they talk about the show and whatever. I have two big critiques of this show. The first is, as JVL mentioned, they do this very, very annoying thing where they are constantly switching from film to like, I think Super 8 to VHS. And I wouldn't mind that if there was any rhyme or reason.
I was about to ask, they must, if you were to ask them right now, if they were here and say, what was the significance of switching it from this to this at this moment to
I would assume they would have some sort of bullshit reason for it. But as best as I can tell as a viewer and as somebody who like pays a lot of attention to film stock, because I think it's an interesting way to differentiate different things that you are doing in a show, like along with like, not just the film stock, but also aspect ratio. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a really interesting tool that you could use. And I can't tell what the fuck they're doing with it in this. It just is, as best as I can tell, totally
and
random.
Even,
JVL, what is,
even if there is a rhyme or reason for it, it does not work because they're doing it sometimes once every 90 seconds.
They're doing it shot to shot in the same scene.
So often that it is burdensome to the viewer, I think.
It's very, very annoying. It calls attention to itself and not...
Oh, boy.
And my other critique is just a mild, like, it's more an ideological annoyance than anything else. But, like, I get a show run by two white guys talking about, you know, the racism of the NBA and Jack Kent Cooke, and who I had to explain to Beth used to be the owner of the
Redskins.
Right?
Did she? Yeah.
I knew him as the owner of the Redskins. I didn't realize that he owned the Lakers.
Yeah, but like the whole thing where they're like talking about the code words for Larry Bird and Magic Johnson, and like every time they're talking about Larry Bird, the word, you know,
hardworking,
white flashes, hardworking, white,
cerebral,
and when it's Magic Johnson, you know, they're talking about natural athletic talent, and black, like we get it, guys, you're very bold.
The head.
We understand.
Adam McKay.
And that is very much Adam McKay's thing. He wants to, you know, he's one of the good white folks, so he wants to make sure everybody knows that. That said, I've been enjoying the shit out of the show. I think I love John C. Reilly. I think he's very good as Jerry Buss. And I think that, you know, even if it cost the world the partnership of Adam McKay and Will Ferrell, it was worth it because Jerry Buss is so good in this. And I love Gabby Hoffman.
And I know she is.
She had it in her.
She's so good. She's been good for the last. She's been in a couple of things in recent years.
She's been good since the Field of Dreams.
But yeah, she's a child star. She went away for a little bit. I think she had some personal issues, but she came back recently in this. And God, there was something else, Veep or something. Yeah. I'll have
her. I find her intriguing, and
sexually, you mean?
I find her intriguing
because the way that you intone that makes me think that it's, you know,
I don't know why I find her intriguing. And even though I know a good friend of ours who we text with from time to time says that she is, quote, batshit crazy, grew up in the Chelsea Hotel or one of those places. I mean, crazy.
Yeah. No, she grew up in a hotel.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a very strange bohemian upbringing. Yes.
And yet.
But this is her best. I think this is her best work.
She's very good in this. Yeah. Again, she was in some. I'll look it up. She was in something recently. Mm-hmm. She was very good in. I love Jason Clarke as Jerry West. I love the whole both trying to puncture the myth of Jerry West, the logo, but also like it is deeply sympathetic to him.
I think,
in a way that like it gets to the heart of his frustrations in a way that I think is. I mean, look, I again, this is a show that is very much denounced by the powers that be at the NBA. They all hate it. They all say it's,
oh, that's,
you know,
interesting.
Nonsense.
Yeah. And, really?
Yeah, I
yeah, they don't care for it. They do not care for it. Magic Johnson, not a fan of this show.
It's Magic Johnson
Magic
is not
a fan. Portrayed as a monster.
Well, he's portrayed as a human.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, yeah, you know, it is what, yeah, it is.
Cocky.
What it is.
Okay.
But yeah, I found it very entertaining. I find the business angle of it fascinating. I'm curious to see what they do with, like, the forum qua forum, the forum as like a business location in and of itself. I'm fascinated by the, like, explosion in popularity of the NBA and how they essentially, I mean, that league was very close to folding in the late 70s. And early 80s, and how they're rebuilding it here. I love Michael Chiklis as Red Auerbach.
It's great.
Michael Chiklis.
I mean, that whole sequence is wonderful. Just the crazy eyes on Michael Chiklis. Like
their sit down, the restaurant.
The sit down at the restaurant. Why don't we throw another lobster on there? Yeah, like,
that's,
I just,
so good.
I was skeptical going into the show. I have been deeply entertained, and that's about all you can ask for in a show of this sort.
JVL.
So I only know the basketball side of the story. I do not know the personnel and business backstory of the Buss family and all that. So I have no idea how much of this is for real and how much is not. All of that said, I also am enjoying the crap out of it. It's very, very fun to watch. If I had a complaint, and it's also incredibly well written, like, I think the characters are really interesting. You want to spend time with
all of them.
All of that said, I find myself as a viewer missing John C. Reilly anytime he's not on screen. Because he's so, and I look,
it's,
I
so
always
crazy.
I always loved John C. Reilly, but I feel like this is the part he was born to play. And he plays Jerry Buss as if he is Royal Tenenbaum, but good. Right. Imagine if Royal Tenenbaum was underneath it all, a good guy.
Right.
Instead of just a son of a bitch. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's how he's just electric. Like, you just want to be around, and you want to be around the character, and you also want to be around John C. Reilly's portrayal of the character. And so I find myself, especially with the Magic stuff, I don't always want to be with Magic, and maybe it'll be different once Magic is on the Lakers and is part of it, right? A little bit of Magic goes a long way. I am desperate to spend more time with Kareem, right? Because the guy who plays Kareem, I forget his name. I have it pulled up on IMDb somewhere. He's very, very good. So the single most interesting directorial choice of the two episodes is that
Solomon Hughes.
He's fantastic in this. And I mean, he's helped by the fact that Kareem is a phenomenally interesting guy.
The actor, you mean? Yeah, Solomon Hughes. Yeah.
Solomon Hughes, right? But Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is one of the most interesting characters in, like, the last 50 years of sports. And also has turned into a really nice writer. I don't know if you guys have noticed that. Like, for a while, he was just, like, writing essays from Newsweek every once in a while. And really good, actually. Anyway, they show his famous scene from Airplane.
Yeah.
But they don't just show the scene from Airplane. They reshoot the scene from Airplane with kids, you know, with a different kid and a different.
Yeah, it looks like.
And it's a weird, like, at first I thought to myself, wait a minute, this. Did they just put his face? You know,
did they shoot the whole thing?
Right? No, they did. And so I went and rewatched the actual scene in Airplane. Mm-hmm. And the truth is, actually, Kareem is pretty good on screen.
Yeah,
like, his stiffness really works.
Yeah,
in that.
Yeah, trying to pretend that he's not who he is. But here's my question: in Winning Time, and they show that scene from Airplane, and they walk off the set, and the kid asks for his, you know, autograph, and he says, "Fuck off." But besides that, was that the Zucker brothers playing themselves in the background?
I wonder, because they're so old that I thought to myself, wait a minute, the Zucker brothers would not have been that old.
I don't know.
Yeah, no, they wouldn't have been that old. I think it was them. Okay, I'm glad I forgot to make
a note. So anyway, there are lots of other things. We can talk about the basketball aspect of it later.
Yeah.
Vic, did you love this? Because this feels you love the 70s. It feels like Boogie Nights basketball.
It does, and it exactly was. And I actually have a sort of quadrant for it, but it's still not, you know, it's TBD, as they say, because, you know, I mean, there's still some missing things. Nevertheless, the plot I give an A minus, and it's only a minus because the thing about buying teams and the trades and running a franchise is very complicated, and I found it very good. They're talking about land swaps with Jack Kedcook. What is happening there? Okay,
he's just buying the team.
I don't know. Land swaps.
He's just trading the Chrysler building for the team.
This is insane. Okay, duration is a B plus. That's pretty good. Action violence, as in like playing on the court, is TBD because we haven't actually seen them play yet, except for a pickup game back in Lansing where Magic is a real jerk to the other guy who's dating the girl he likes, and the party scene where he plays with Norm Nixon and gets schooled and embarrassed by Norm Nixon, which is really interesting.
Well, this is my wife Beth's complaint about the show so far. There's like no basketball for it being
right.
A basketball.
It's going to happen. It's going to happen because I don't know how many episodes in this, Sonny. How many episodes are in this?
It's 10.
So I assume they'll take us right to the. I assume they'll take us to not just the championship then, but because I assume to the point where James Worthy joins the team.
Well, the show begins with the like prologue to the show is the day Magic finds out he has AIDS.
Yeah.
So I assume it goes all the way through that whole.
Because
I don't know. Will they end up there again?
Michael Jordan hadn't retired when Magic was diagnosed with HIV. Had he?
I don't know, man.
Because he sees People magazine, and it's Michael Jordan talking about life after basketball.
Oh, no. Do you remember, was it the initial one and then he came back or no?
I don't think so. He retired the first time when I was in high school, and no, I guess when I was in college. No.
Jordan retired after the Dream Team, and Magic was diagnosed with AIDS before the Dream Team, right?
Yeah,
I think so.
I mean, that's how
I remember it.
We'll see. We'll find out. Because what I thought to myself. Is it, oh, we're getting Magic's AIDS diagnosis. But when he sees the People magazine, I thought maybe the timeline of that is wrong.
I will say, and sex and or nudity is an A++++. Every episode, we're 2 for 2.
I hope
every episode has a treat.
Finally something for Vic.
Oh, my goodness. The Playboy Mansion. JVL, you've been to the Playboy Mansion. Was it like that for you?
Uh-huh.
It was just piles of bodies everywhere.
It was amazing. The Playboy Mansion is one of those things where you think to yourself, like, oh, it can't be that good. And you're like, nope.
Wow.
Nope, it's that good. So, Victor, you liked
it. I liked it a lot, and particularly, you know, I'm not an NBA, much like I'm not a baseball expert or anything near it, yet I found myself so fascinated by the personalities that I ended up reading up on Jerry Buss and Jerry West, as well as later on, I guess, Paul Westhead, who had taken over temporarily, and then Pat Riley eventually, and all those various personalities, in addition to, you know, Magic Johnson. And, well, I mean, I obviously knew about Magic Johnson and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, but also these other players as well, Norm Nixon. And they mention Moncrief as well as in the draft. I mean, so you can go down a rabbit hole about the draft and who was picked and the whole thing. And I just found it entirely fascinating, and the organization. I love John C. Reilly as well, although I can't, every time you see him, at least when I see him, I'm always thinking like either Chest Rockwell or Cal Naughton Jr. I mean, you know, because he's like, you can't take him seriously. And so there's that weirdness.
Dewey Cox.
Hmm? Yeah, that's right. Dewey Cox. And so,
did you ever watch Walk Hard?
Parts. I never finished
it. I recommend it because it's great, but it's also the sort of movie that once you watch it, you will never be able to watch another musical biopic again
because it skewers
the formula so perfectly.
Yeah. Oh, and I really like the actor who plays Magic Johnson, Quincy Isaiah. And what I wondered, and I have to watch the interviews then, he sounds like Magic Johnson. And I wondered if he actually sounds that way when he's not acting the part. or not.
I don't know. He's probably British or something.
No, I mean, like I remember watching The Wire and being, you know, and that's the first time I ever saw Idris Elba.
You're like,
I had no idea. I had no idea he was.
Well, so in the after show, on the most recent after show, Jason Clarke was on.
Yeah, he's Australian,
isn't he? Jason Clarke is very Australian.
That's so crazy.
So like, it goes from like Jerry West's like not quite West Virginia twang, like kind of like kind of like talking through his teeth to like, oi, mates, let's throw another shrimp on the barbie and play some basketball. It's like,
that's
okay.
Crazy.
He sounds nothing like that, obviously.
Do you find that was really generic? That was your Outback Grill.
Have some Fosters, mate.
Yeah, our, let's go.
This
let's
is
go.
A knife.
Let's go fight some kangaroos.
Our friend Mike Warren, who does many impressions, by the way. Our friend Mike Warren and
previous guest host.
Yes, previous guest host. He says that the way Australians say razor blades is rise up lights. Rise up lights.
That's how that's good. That's
right. Like
rise up lights.
Rise up lights. Ah, so is it an accurate portrayal of Jerry West in terms of his personality? I've read about him, and the most I read about him is that he was very sort of withdrawn and shy and almost reclusive, but the anger and the bitterness.
Well, and I mean, with so many of these guys, like, I don't know, was he an alcoholic? Right. Maybe there's a good biography of Jerry West, but you know, this is the type of stuff that would never have been hinted at in the contemporary press, right? Like you could never read the sports section, and you know, when I'm sure all of the sports, if somebody like him was a problem drinker, which is what it sounds like, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, the things you hear,
yeah,
when Buss says to him, you know, I used to drink bourbon too, but I switched to vodka because he couldn't smell it as much.
That's a great line.
So, I mean, you know, he seems to have some demons. He's a famously difficult person, but, you know, it's always framed as because he's a perfectionist and because he's just so competitive. But who knows? I mean, a lot of the guys at the very, very top level of the NBA were difficult people. Larry Bird is famously difficult. Michael Jordan is the biggest
sociopath.
Asshole. An absolute sociopath, right?
Yeah.
And it is rare to find guys who, like Johnson, like LeBron, right, who seem to be, by the standards of professional athletedom, like basically okay people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's at the very, very top level.
Yeah.
You know, at the level of like normal all-star, you know, you're going to find good people and bad people, but it's fine. But at like the generational talent level, a lot of those guys are that way because they're assholes, right?
Yeah. I liked the second episode better than the first because the first one, again, with Adam McKay, I just felt like it was more Adam McKay than Adam McKay.
Second one was directed by Jonah Hill?
Yes.
Yeah. First one directed by Adam McKay.
Yes.
Very Adam McKay.
Yeah.
And so we hinted at this a bit before, but like, so there was a story in Esquire, Profile of Adam McKay, when Don't Look Up came out, and he was talking about this show. He was talking about how when he was developing the show, he and Will Ferrell had a production company together, right? They had founded Funny or Die. They were making a lot of stuff together. And like Adam McKay was getting more and more into producing. Was like he wanted to have his fingers in a lot of different pots. And Will Ferrell like wasn't super into that. He just kind of wanted to act and do his thing. But when the show was being developed, Will Ferrell wanted to do it because he's a huge Lakers fan. He was like, I want to play Jerry Buss. And Adam McKay was like, yeah, sure, you can play Jerry Buss, absolutely. That's totally fine. That's totally fine. And then Adam McKay started thinking about it. It was like, I actually don't want Will to play Jerry Buss. So I'm going to ask his best friend, John C. Reilly, to do it. And I'm not going to tell John C. Reilly that I already told Will Ferrell that he could have the part. And I'm not going to tell Will Ferrell that John C. Reilly has been hired. They're just going to find out about it from Variety or Deadline or whoever. And after that, they like, I mean, like it's, I texted a LA friend this story, and he was like, well, no wonder they don't work together, because that's like the one thing you cannot do. It's like, you have to tell people. Yeah. Like it's one thing if you don't want to work with a guy on a project, that's, people understand, there may be some hard feelings, but if you just don't tell them and do it anyway, and they find out, it's like, of course they're never going to work together again.
Maybe Adam was just hoping that Will just wouldn't see it on the Macs.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
you know, just maybe right. He wouldn't notice it.
It confirms many of my feelings about Adam McKay and the sort of person he is.
Well, you know what, though? He is right about the casting.
Oh.
He was right.
Oh,
he was right.
Great.
As I said, this is the part John C. Reilly was born to play.
Yeah.
And can we talk a little bit about the Lakers, qua the Lakers?
Yeah.
And the... Because this really was the moment when the NBA took off. And it took off for a couple reasons. One of which was you had two legitimate dynasties in the Celtics
and the Lakers.
And you had a couple other really good teams.
In the 1980s, like either the Lakers or the Celtics was in the finals every year.
Every single year.
I think that's...
Yeah. And I think they won all but maybe two of them, where I think the Sixers had one championship in 83, I think. And maybe Portland wins. I'd have to go and look.
Did the Pistons win like 89, 90?
The Pistons start winning when I'm in high school. So I don't know if it's 89, 90 or like 90, 91.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a brief window before the Bulls then emerge. Mm-hmm. But part of it is that it was very high quality basketball because you had a concentration of talent on the teams, right? Which is the big thing. At the bottom of the NBA, it was very bad basketball because there just wasn't enough talent. But at the top, right? I mean, these teams were stacked, absolutely stacked. You know, I mean, you look at the Celtics and the Lakers, and those teams each have like three guys. Each team has three guys who are in the NBA All 50 team.
Yeah,
which
yeah.
is nuts, right? And they played a very attractive style of basketball. They were fun to watch. Bird and Magic had this rivalry dating back to college.
Right.
Bird and Magic, again, two top 10 all-time NBA players in the same, like, college year, which is nuts. And that, I mean, also, basketball is a really good TV product. I think it's a better TV product than baseball is in many ways. It's not as good as a radio product, but it really works well on TV. And as people were starting to need to fill more hours of television,
right?
Basketball was there, right? And that because this is the cable revolution creates just more hours of content needed to be produced every year, and so sports leagues, all sports leagues, were going to be pulled along into that. And so it makes sense, of course, that the NBA became what it did. And then it just, you know, like rocket fuel once Jordan got there. Yeah. Cause that was like everybody's chance to see Babe Ruth.
Right.
Something, you know, like you never get to do it, right? Nobody ever gets to see Babe Ruth. Yeah. So, and it became global. Right. And that's the other thing Jordan did is Jordan opened up the Chinese market. Mm-hmm. And I mean, basketball is so big globally that basketball cards, basketball trading cards, are much, much hotter than baseball trading cards. And the reason is because the demand is all driven by China.
Uh-huh.
So, like, all this Chinese money gets poured into buying up, like, you know, the LeBron James rookie auto one of one,
right.
Stuff like that. Yeah. So... I don't know. I mean, I love those. I love watching those teams. You know, I loved watching Worthy and Magic and Kareem. Loved watching Bird. I mean, I hated Bird because the Celtics were in the East with the Sixers. But, you know, like Dennis Johnson and Bird and Robert Parrish, the Chief, and Bill Ryan. I mean, it was just Kevin McHale. It was just great. Like, that was a great era of the NBA.
I'll tell you what fascinates me, too, watching this is what it must be like. And this is obvious. I know you have thoughts on this. When you're a player, if you know, and you come from a very poor background, and you know you're going to be, you know, you're going to be drafted one or two, and that you're on the cusp of millions, or in that case, I mean, back in 79, like 500,000, 600, whatever, is a lot of money, and what that must be like. Because you're not living that life just yet. You know, he's still there. The family is still, the father's running the garbage routes. He still works for GM, I think, or Ford, you know, in the assembly line, never missed a day. And And he's still in that world, but not for long. It's got to be a weird thing. And, you know, it almost it makes me worry because, you know, like he wants to have play a pickup game. You know, it's supposed to do something stupid like, you know, roll over your, you know, ankle or do something terrible or whatever. But it strikes me as surreal when I'm watching this because they're seeing him and they're still, you know, he's got his college sweetheart. You know, and that is all about to change, obviously.
Yeah, it's really, it's weird. I mean, I don't know about you guys. I have fallen away from the NBA, and I fell away after the Sixers traded Allen Iverson. That was when I just gave up on the NBA. Sonny, you stayed with it through Kobe's run, right?
Basically, after Kobe retired, I was like,
yeah, then you there just gave wasn't away it. And I feel a little bit bad because from what I can tell, the NBA as it exists today is at a high watermark. Like the actual level of play is just totally different and better and more beautiful and all that. But the other thing that has happened to the NBA is that the league has basically been taken over by the players. The NBA was always more of a players' league than any other. But the players really run it now, and they decide where they want to play, and they make little clicks. And a lot of this has to do with the economic structure of the NBA. It has to do with guaranteed contracts and the way free agency works. But the other thing is that the NBA is unlike the other sports, where three guys can decide together that they're going to play together, and that's enough to win a championship.
Yeah.
Not always. Yeah. But, you know, this is simply not the way it is in hockey or football or baseball. Yeah. And so in the NBA, you have it's almost like real life professional wrestling, where there are storylines with beefs and alliances and stables.
That's fascinating.
That's why I actually don't care about the NBA anymore. Mm-hmm. I have the exact opposite response to JBL. I kind of hate that. Mm-hmm. It would be like if back in 90 or back in like 84, Magic and Larry Bird were like, you know what? We should be on the same team together.
Yeah, no,
we'll
I don't
win,
like that
we'll
either.
Win 10 I'm sorry. We'll win 10 championships.
When I say the level is higher, I just meant the actual play on the court. Mm-hmm. The guys are bigger. They're faster. The numbers, like big data has started eating the NBA as well. But on the other hand, it's the only league where you have things like James Harden. I don't know if you guys have followed this, right? So you had Ben Simmons, this superstar guard in Philadelphia who just refused to play. And James Harden, who was not refusing to play in New Jersey, but was like basically like, you know, intentionally bricking it constantly because they just neither of them wanted to play in their organizations anymore. And they said... And it's a weird thing and kind of interesting in its own way.
I hate it. I mean, like, I just think it's contrary to the spirit of sport. I think it is like anti-sport.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it is the absolute opposite of the NFL, where the institutions, meaning the teams, have so much power that the contracts aren't actually contracts. They're these one-sided. The NFL drives me insane. The idea that there is a contract between the organization and the player, but the organization can choose to terminate the contract at any point it wants or to insist on renegotiating the contract at any point it wants. It's like, well, why even? What the hell is happening here, right? That's too much.
It's better.
No, it's better. It's not.
Turning the players into serfs that belong to the land.
No me gusta. But I think baseball is closer to having it right? The competitive balance you need. But what's happening in there? I don't know. I mean, do you guys ever watch Nikola Jokic, this big Eastern European galoot from who plays in Denver? You guys have never seen him?
I've not watched 30 minutes of a basketball game in the last 5 years.
So he's like 6'10" and he's doughy looking and he runs the floor and he has the court sense of Larry Bird. I mean, like he throws these passes that make your eyes fall out of your head, you know, and you have Seth Curry, Steph Curry, who is, you know, has broken the NBA all-time three-point mark and he still has time left in his career. I mean, there's just, the level of play is very high. I just can't get it up for it anymore. Mm-hmm. And it was because the Sixers were so bad for so long. And yeah, they broke my heart.
I mean, the Lakers have LeBron James right now. In theory, I should be like very, very, and I just like, I'm just not into it.
But we're into the show.
Yeah, we're into the show. Good show.
You know, this is one where even though we're not going to be following it, I'm looking forward to the next episode.
Yeah, I'm going
to
watch it.
In more ways than one.
Once more, the Max made the best of the streaming services.
Yeah.
HBO Max is clearly the superior streaming service. Quality. Like, nobody would deny this.
Yeah, versus, like, I mean, think about the stuff we talk about with Netflix.
Well, Disney, I think, is a close second. But Netflix is such a distant third.
Yeah.
Or fourth, maybe. Yeah. I mean, like, honestly, who needs Netflix?
I'd put Hulu in front of Netflix.
I might, well, except that Hulu is really Disney, right? You get them bundled together for the same price. Essentially, I mean, it's like $1 more to add Hulu.
Technically different, yeah. It's like $3 bucks more, but I mean, Hulu is a different thing. It is, but it has better stuff than Netflix by far. Yeah. I mean, I like they're I've watched more series on Netflix, especially on Hulu, especially the FX hub of Hulu that blows Netflix out of the water. If I was not a professional writer of cultural criticism, I would not have a Netflix subscription.
Yeah, totally agree.
I would cancel it.
Okay. Do we have any Spirit of the Week corrections or shout outs?
No. The Gabby Hoffman thing I was thinking of, by the way, she was in the movie Come On, Come On this year, which was very good. And she was also on like two or three seasons of Girls. So she was good on that.
How
show
intriguing.
As well, which I always like.
How intriguing she is.
I'm saying intriguing. And okay, folks, make sure you tune in to a very interesting bonus episode coming out on Monday.
Ooh, that's going to be good.
It's going to be good. It's going to be timely. Did we tell them what it's about or no, Sonny?
We're talking about the Oscars.
Yeah, we're going to talk about the Oscars. Very exciting. Very, very exciting. That is all the time we're giving to this episode. Questions, comments, compliments, tweet us at Sonny Bunch, at Victorina Mattis. Again, be sure to subscribe to us on Patreon. Just go to subbeacon.com. We are there. Tell your friends. Until next time. All right, what do you got?
I got a lot.
I got nothing. I'm glad we all liked that show. I was afraid that it was... You know,
no,
it was
I mean, again, you know... The things that I think we agree on, the things that we don't like, which is sort of on the technical aspects of particularly the Adam McKay episode, which has beat me over the head. It's like more fourth wall than not anymore. And it was like, it worked.
Yeah.
I liked it in The Big Short. Oh, this is unusual-ish because they're doing all these things.
That's over, but it's over like 2 hours. That's the problem. I mean, when you're doing this is going to be 10 hours of that.
Right.
At
and
least,
do we need it? Do we need 10 hours of this? I feel like this is like The Last Dance, the Michael Jordan, the Bulls dynasty.
I mean,
it's been
two episodes, and they haven't even started playing Magic Johnson in the
NBA
yet.
No, he hasn't started. That's
and that works. It's worked.
This should be like four episodes.
No. It's perfectly paced so far. Trust the plan. Trust the program.
Wait till he meets. Like, you know, all the NBA groupies.
Are we going to get a full episode on Kurt Rambis?
Hopefully. Vic, before we go, I want to tease you.
Oh, please.
You are going to greatly enjoy the movie Deepwater.
Oh, yes. So that's a movie or a series?
Ben Affleck, Ana de Armas, directed by Adrian Lyne.
You had me at Anna.
Directed by Adrian Lyne, the director of Fatal Attraction.
I can't believe I can't believe that guy's still around.
Flashdance. He hasn't made a movie in 20 years.
But he made a special one.
He's back now.
This is good. It's going to crush the quadrants, huh?
Is she wearing the silver dress from the Bond movie?
No, she's not wearing
it. I hope she's wearing the outfit that she wore as a hologram in Blade Runner.
Okay, I'm sure it's fine.